Hey everyone, I got another special episode for you today. Some more Q&A with Uncle David. It's not going to put you to sleep, even though I have my favorite mentor and coach and client, Dr. Meeta Singh, to talk to us about sleep and the importance of sleep in our productivity, accessibility, and gratitude, but most importantly, how it protects our immune system. And I also have Erin Ashley, the expert of esports, the fastest growing sport in the world, and she is the host at Cheddar for esports. You got to join me for Dr. Meeta and Erin on this episode of The Playbook. Also, I'm still going to be live on Instagram, 8 a.m. You got to join me. Give me your questions. I'll be happy to answer them.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook.
All right, welcome everyone. We live?
Yes.
All right. We are adhering to the quarantine here in Orange County, California. We have our scaled down crew. Probably be the last time, even with the scaled down crew, I'll probably be one-on-one Instagram live starting tomorrow, making sure that we are not spreading or damaging anything. And everyone should be careful and cautious first, and then move forward from there and gain stability for themselves and then for others, and then look for opportunity. That's kind of the pipeline that I'm looking at. We're going to take some questions. There's a lot going on, and mindset is more important than ever, as I'm trying to get to as many phone calls all day long, making myself available to others to be of service and of value. But there is absolutely great opportunity to gain stability for yourself and for others, and to gain opportunity for yourself and for others. Change your mindset, change your life. You know, it's interesting because I have a sign I saw today. I have a meditation area with like six quotes on the walls. And one of the quotes just, I didn't realize was there, but it said, "I live each day as it's my last, and I learn the lessons as if I'm going to live forever." Somebody asked me today on a call about, you know, how to handle whatever is going on. And I said, well, if you look at life and know that it's about the lessons, then everything's okay, right? It's just about an exciting opportunity to learn more. And that's difficult because we have to practice ending fear. You know, sometimes we get in our own way and the lessons are right there. And if we don't learn the lessons, we know it's going to result in pain, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional pain if we don't learn the lessons. So I'm trying to help people accelerate and learn those lessons through the experiences I've had and the reading and podcast and all the things that I am trying to figure out so that you have less pain. But pain is just an indicator that you haven't learned the lesson. So let's keep our perspective on learning lessons. Let's help one another. Let's see the positives and other opportunities that can arise from this situation. There'll be a whole bunch of new ways to do things that stem from this opportunity today. Whole bunch of ways that we can
also start digital agency in esports. Tell them to hang around on 9 because we're going to have Aaron from Cheddar Esports.
Nihil, interested in starting a digital agency for esports. What should I do? Let me answer that now.
We have that Aaron from Cheddar Esports coming on at 9.
Oh.
So if he wants to stick around till 9.
Oh, yeah. Stick around till 9 o'clock. I have the Cheddar Esports, Aaron from Cheddar.
Aaron Ashley Simon
from Esports. Cheddar Esports is going to come on. We can answer that question with, I'm going to bring a few experts to answer some questions as well. I'm going to bring Dr. Meeta Singh on as well about sleep. She's a sleep doctor for several NFL teams and actually the Washington Nationals. Do we have some questions coming on to call people?
Yeah, going right now.
All right, we're
going
to call somebody. Let me know your questions. Text me at 949-298-2905. 949-298-2905. We got tons of questions to go through. I'm more than happy and available to help you. Please let me know how. And here we go. Who's this?
It's Johnny Thompson.
Johnny Thompson. All right. Here we go.
You reached John Thompson.
Hey, John.
Sorry, I can't come to
the phone. All right. The problem is we have so many. Anyway, some of the other issues that have been coming up is about resources. And so, you know, it's okay. You know, the word inventory to me makes more sense than hoarding or panicking. I would spend your time focusing in on taking an inventory, not only of your values, personal, experiential, giving and receiving values, but also taking an inventory of what you have and what you need, right? We want to simplify things, and I think you'll find that there's some essentials that you have that you didn't know that you have, and then there's some wasteful things that you have. And taking inventory is a great way to create efficiencies, effectiveness, and statistical success. For those of you that weren't here, you know, one of the inventories that I take is time. And taking inventory time takes an analysis of what do I do every minute, every hour, every week, sorry, every day, every week, every month, and every year. But taking that inventory allows me to regain and to maximize my productivity. So yesterday we discussed, for example, on average, most people waste 80 hours a year looking for things. And the number one things that they look for are keys and wallet. So if you want to regain, let's say that you're going to lose 3 weeks of productivity, of activity you're going to get paid for during this period of time, if you create a system to make sure that you don't lose your keys and your wallets, you're already getting 2 weeks of productivity back. There's so many other things that you can do. I'm always looking for things in 4 minute increments because I know that every 4 minutes that I can save a day is 24 hours of productivity a year. Every 4 minutes that I can save a day is 3 full days of productivity. So if you can find 10 things for four, you're looking at 30 days, you just gained a month. That puts a majesty of calmness back into losing some of this time of activity we get paid for as you re-engineer and repurpose what you do, how you do it, in order to be more successful. But you're not going to be able to do this if you create more interference and more corrosion to that powerful source of light, lessons, and love that you already have. So make sure that
your phone is not authorized.
Taking advantage of understanding that inspiration that you have, taking advantage of the strength that you have and are able to give to others. Because if you want to strengthen your immune system, one of the greatest ways to strengthen your immune system is to have serotonin released. And the best way to do that is to be kind or to give. The people that are giving serotonin is released in your mind. The people receiving serotonin is released. And
Grant,
the people that witness you. Hi, Grant. Hello. Hello. Hey, Grant. It's David Meltzer.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well.
I love to hear it. I know you had a question for us. I was hoping you could share it with our community so we all could learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me pull that back up.
Thank you.
Yeah, so just finished one of your books, and using your principles, staying connected to goodness, how are you able to balance professional work with also a side hustle and kind of still managing both that same balance?
Great question. And so I think a lot of side hustles will be developed as we're sitting in this situation that we're in. Just remember, the legs feed the lion. So what I suggest is a little bit of counterintuitive for people, but they start to get it and they start realizing how great it is. I look to see how much better I can get at what I'm doing because I know the legs feed the lion. So before I focus any attention onto a side hustle that interests me, I focus in on getting more efficient, more effective, and statistically successful that I'm doing, because if I can make twice as much money or do it twice as fast, I can use that money and that time to build my side hustle. Because usually, if people are building a side hustle, they want that side hustle to be the primary hustle, which then they can focus and create, you know, and say that those are the legs, and then those legs be the lion, not the other one. But I don't think it's easy. It's so hard to create a business anyway, unless it's a downstream, meaning somebody else's business or a business within your business where you're just handing it off and taking a percentage or creating a margin. Go ahead, focus in on what you're doing today and do it better. And create more time and create more money so that you can make your side hustle your legs. And remember, always the legs feed the lion. So the stronger you are, the more capability that you'll have. You know, for me, I use a vertebrae approach where I always know where my legs are, right? And that's my primary focus. I want to make sure that I'm making my money and always trying to make more money there, doubling my money as fast as I can, doing things as efficiently as I can, creating systems, like I said, trying to save those 4 minutes a day that turns into 3 days a year. But I focus in on that. Then from there, like a vertebrae, it can go down to other businesses that have spun off from it, where other people run it, and I create a margin or a percentage from that, or a vertebrae where it comes off into a different region, where there's partners who want to work with me, and I have a simple overlap agreement that says, hey, this percentage for me introducing you to the deal, or here, this higher percentage for me closing or assisting in procuring that deal for you beyond just an introduction. And that vertebrae for me just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I got more and more discs of downstream within my vertebrae and more offspring of different regions of my back that I'm getting percentage of. All are determinative upon what? The legs. Always focusing on the top, because the more money I make up top and the more time I save up top, the more time that I can give to build these relationships either within my own vertebrae or one of the offspring that comes from, I'm sorry, within my own spine. I'm not a doctor, but I just figured out the better terminology.
Right.
My companies are within my spine. The vertebrae are the offshoot of the partnerships that I have. But the key to that, your question is for everyone out there that is going to be developing a side hustle, get better at what you do. This is a great opportunity to start looking in and seeing how you have credibility, emotional attachment, quantitative reasons, impacts, capabilities, impact in the world, as well as features and benefits of what you want to do. But always remember, the legs feed the lion. Does that sound fair?
Got it. Awesome. Appreciate it, David. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, man. Enjoy yourself. Take care. All right.
You too. Thank you.
Cool. I was looking on here and someone says, how do I work with time, as you call the next person? What tools do I use? I'll answer this real quick.
Okay.
So it says, what tools do I use for time? I use a calendar, and I use multiple calendars. I call it being a student of my calendar. But I not only have my calendar, I have a printed calendar, I have a phone calendar, I have my laptop calendar, I have people reminding me about my calendar. But regardless of how many places that I can be aware of my time, most importantly, I study time. And in about a minute and a half, we're going to see 1/3 of the time that I study is spent on sleep. It's the number one habit that all of us have. It's the most spent time that people on earth all share in an innate habit called sleep. While we're sleeping, we are connected to the most powerful source of light, lessons, and love at all time, meaning our subconscious and unconscious either are creating interference or cleaning the interference. If we know how to sleep and we practice sleep the way we practice everything else, utilizing and being a student of our calendar, meaning I'm putting attention plus intention for the coincidences that I want in my time frame by using multiple calendars and multiple reminders and multiple people, because it's a very difficult thing to remember all the phone calls and meetings and Instagram meetings and lives, etc. But studying it, paying and focusing in on it, and we're going to call Mita right now. Go ahead if you can. We're going to go ahead and call her. It's 8:15 right now. So we'll work this. Let's get Dr. Mita Singh on, and I'm going to ask her a few questions for me about sleep, about tools for time and how sleep is relative to what we're doing immune system-wise, about efficiency, productiveness, accessibility, mindset-wise, all the things that we want to know.
Hello?
Hi, Mita.
How are you?
I am terrific. You are on with my community, and I have some questions for you. We were just talking about tools of time, and I said one of the things that I study the most is sleep. It's one third of my life, or supposed to be. And you know, I want to start because everyone's concerned, of course, today about their health. And you know, you are a complete expert about sleep. What should we be doing with our sleep to protect ourselves or build our immune system, or how is it all related to what's going on today?
Well, so, you know, to begin with, you know, let's talk about what sleep is. You know, sleep is a biological need. You know, sleep forces you to disengage from the environment. And as a result, your brain and body recovers and recuperates. I mean, that is, you know, disengagement from the environment for a few hours is really essential in today's world.
Can the brain and body actually, you know, we talk about recuperation and recovery, but I believe that while I sleep, I'm actually taking it to the next level of accelerating and growing while I'm sleeping.
You're absolutely right. So when I, you know, so what it does is, so think about what happens to our brain when we are sleeping. It's like, you know, it's like being power washed. So blood rushes through and all all the toxins that you've accumulated during the day get flushed out. But you're right, because sleep is really essential for boosting and maintaining your immunity, right? So that is one thing that is integral today. The second thing is that overall, sleep is integral for stress regulation. So, poor sleep will worsen depression, worsen anxiety. If you're having issues with sleeping at night and you're staying up and thinking about something, you're never going to come up with a good solution. All things seem much worse when you're up at night.
Yeah.
And not sleeping.
Things grow arms and legs for sure. And I actually used to, this was interesting, I used to wake up at 4 a.m. while I was in law school, where there was a lot of stress and I wasn't as developed in my practice of ending fear and my practice of sleep and other things. But I recall I would wake up and try to fight sleep, and I would end up by 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. when everybody else was awaking and it was time to go to either class or the gym, I would be exhausted because during that period, instead, I changed my system and I started living my life where I could get a full sleep, wake up at 4 a.m. and get going. And it was the reduction of all of those arms and legs. I remember sometimes wearing myself off or worrying what time I was going to do my laundry. Like these little things that are irrational when you're rested really end up, being big interferences or blockage to what we do. Now, beyond that, what tips could you give people that are, very worried now and anxious? They have financial concerns, they have health concerns. What can they do so that they sleep better?
Okay, so, obviously our world has been upended. We have to face facts, and, we may not have a schedule. There's uncertainty about the future. Here are my 10 simple sleep commandments or suggestions. The first is to establish a regular bedtime and waking up time. Also, in preparation to going to bed, David, it's good to build a good winding down schedule. So think, if you think you want to go to bed, say, 11 o'clock, about 25 to, maybe 45 minutes before that, maybe taking a hot bath or a shower, make some stretching exercises, maybe meditation and prayer, reading a book, listening to a book or a podcast. Those are all things that help you wind down.
And to that matter, when you're listening, because I know this is something that I do, I suggest, and tell me if it makes a difference, that what you listen to should be something inspirational or positive, not something disturbing or scary.
Yes, of course. On the same note, playing video games or checking social media or looking at the news before you go to bed is not going to help. It's going to wind you up. I know people will say that playing a video game or checking social media helps you wind down, but that is not winding down. It's more of a distraction. So you're not really truly winding down. But yes, when you pick or choose to read a book or listen to a program, you want to listen to something that is relaxing, that is positive, and that will help you relax, because now you're making a effort to actually mindfully choose to do something that is going to help you relax.
Beautiful. And what's the next suggestion or advice?
So number three, I would say, is, which people might not like it, but don't drink excessive alcohol 2 to 3 hours before your bedtime. And this is the bad time to chew or smoke tobacco.
Yeah. Well, especially
again,
smoke, considering this disease attacks the lungs.
Yes. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Then, of course, avoid caffeine, 2 to 5 hours before your bedtime. And that includes a coffee, tea, many of the sodas, but have a chocolate. Chocolate has a large amount of caffeine in it. I would say number five is avoid heavy or spicy foods 2 to 3 hours before bedtime. A light snack is acceptable.
And what's some suggestions of snacks so people out there I know are regimented on their diet or conscious of it? What's some good snacks to eat?
Well, nuts are good. Yogurt, maybe a banana. Those would be.
What about people on here on my feed are saying, like, what about smoking marijuana, like smoking weed? Does that calm you down? Is that something you should do before you go to bed?
No, I got very bad news then.
These are only in states where it's legal.
It is legal. The data out there says that, like alcohol, it may initially help you fall asleep, but then, you know, you may need larger amounts as time goes by to help you sleep. But also, we now know that some part of it will fracture your sleep in the middle of the night. So it may actually cause poorer sleep as the night progresses. You may have lighter sleep. Sometimes it can cause anxiety. It can cause some amount of paranoia.
Perfect. All right. Next piece of advice.
Okay. So exercise regularly. Exercise is, it's a great, great stress buster, but maybe not right before your bedtime. I would say make sure your bedroom is comfortable, have good, comfortable bed. The correct temperature is cold. It's better for the bedroom to be, 65 to 67 degrees. Keep the bedroom well ventilated. I would say block out all distracting loud noises. Here's another point. Sometimes people prefer to have a sound machine, and that's perfectly fine, because it's loud, sudden noises that can actually disrupt your sleep. So you want to avoid that. Eliminate as much light as possible. Keep it as dark as possible. And my final for sleep command is always reserve your bed for sex and sleep. Only don't use it for work, or for any other kind of recreation.
Well, speaking of sex, is that something that's good to have before you go to sleep?
Absolutely.
All right, go ahead. If my wife is watching, I told you so. I told you so. See, I got to make sure I'm sleeping well, and so are you, my good. This, if you're gonna review anything of the Ten Commandments, I like this one right here. So that, thank you. I didn't pay her to say. I didn't pay you to say that, did I?
No, not at all.
All right, good.
Well, there's one more thing. I think it's also important to do certain things during the day that help us sleep.
And what are those?
Well, so first of all, establish a daily schedule, which includes some sort of outdoor activity, because, outdoor light is really, it helps strengthen our circadian system. And in today's world, and what's going on right now, because a lot of people are working from home, so it's really essential to create a routine, because it gives us some stability in life, something that is dependable and predictable. And I think people are, that's what is missing from schedules right now. So creating a schedule.
Right. And I think it's interesting in the times that we don't know as daily, the rules change of what we can do during the day and what we should be doing. I always teach, I have a strict routine, and then when things change, I have an adaptable routine. And the reason I have an adaptable routine is that that's now based on my priorities. So for example, today I'm on an adaptable routine because we had to close our office. And that adaptable routine is a minimum of an hour a day of health, working out, stretching, a minimum of time with each of my family members. Then being a student of my calendar allows me to create a new schedule by paying attention to three things: what I have planned for the day, the white space, or what I don't have planned for the day, and then my sleep. And all three of those, I believe, are directly related to strengthening my mind, body, and soul. And when I say my mind, body, and soul, those are all three directives of my immune system. And this disease that is contagious, it is an immune disease, right? It's mm-hmm. really impacting people's immune system. What effects does sleep have on your immune system?
So you know, overall, sleep is integral for a robust immune system. It helps you mount immunity. So it, first of all, it helps you fight off infection. Now, if somebody's been, for example, has been vaccinated, you actually need sleep to for the vaccinations to take effect, so that you can develop the antibodies, the antigens that have formed in your body to fight, you know, any further infection. So it really is, and then of course sleep is needed if you do get an infection. So sleep will recruit all those cells that are needed to fight the infection.
Oh, wow. All right.
So, you know, integral in every aspect.
And I'm going to go a little bit farther just because I've done this practice my whole life. Gratitude's very important to me. And my mom taught me to say thank you before I go to sleep and when I wake up. I believe that practice created serotonin and a bunch of other things right before I went to bed that also helps my immune system and helps me sleep. And is there any scientific or any advice that you have just as far as, you know, old-fashioned prayer before you go to bed of being grateful and when you wake up?
Yeah, well, I would say that should be a part of, everyday life, but even more important now because, you know, we're living in such uncertain times. So having some sort of faith in a higher calling or really will help stabilize us. The one more thing that I would say is, David, it's really because we're talking to all doctors, we're all just talking about social distancing. It's kind of important to know that basically means physical distancing. You know, what the recommendation is that you keep, you should have about a radius of 6 to 10 feet around you when you're interacting with other human beings. So because that way the chances of you contracting the virus is reduced. But you still want to keep up with your social contacts, right? You want to, which is what you're doing right now. You know, you want to pick up the phone, you want to video chat, you want to speak with others because that's essential for mental health. And of course, for the fourth dimension, which is spiritual health, is what you were referring to. Sort of prayer, any sort of spiritual practice is essential at this point.
Well, I appreciate you coming on here and helping everyone. And I agree. I think that's part of why not having steady sleep is so dangerous because it creates that separation and aloneness. And when you are separated and alone, that's when things grow arms and legs. And we should be using all these terrific devices that allow us to connect to one another, even though we're not hugging each other anymore or shaking hands. And so I will say this, Dr. Mita Singh here, I believe you should always have three mentors. And, you know, we both mentor each other in the capabilities that we have and the strengths that we have. But it's the most essential coach that I have is the sleep coach and understanding sleep. And it's changed my whole life and has also assisted me with not being afraid when things like this happen. And so it is a practice to ending fear by sleeping well. And it does establish, so I can't think of one negative thing if you sleep the right way. If you don't sleep enough or you oversleep, things can happen. But if you understand sleep, it is one of the most powerful tools, just like eating well. Sleeping well and eating well are great tools to having a happy, healthy, and successful life. And I am so grateful for you. Hopefully, Mita, we'll talk soon. And everyone out there, let's give a big round of applause for my dear friend, Dr. Mita Singh. If you have any questions, I'm sure she'll be open. Where can they reach you, Mita?
Well, I am on LinkedIn.
Perfect.
It's Mita Singh, MD. And then, of course, I am on Twitter. It's @SleepMD1. And, you know, I was going to say. First of all, you know, sleep and insomnia and stress are trending right now. On Twitter, especially amongst healthcare workers. I mean, you know, these people, we're at the front lines right now. And the second thing I would say is, you know, share your concerns with others. Don't bottle it up. It is important to reach out at this time to people, you know, who you think you can speak with, even amongst your family members too. Because that would be, if you bottle up your fears, that will directly result in poor sleep at night. That is going to, because once you get into bed, that's when, then you allow yourself to think for the first time. And then it is difficult to fall asleep.
Absolutely. And certainly appreciate you. And any of you Washington National fans, this woman actually has a World Series ring since she helped them win 4 road games to win the World Series. So any of those fans, definitely reach out. Thank you so much, Mita. Have a wonderful one today. Thank you for all your help.
Take care, David.
You too. Bye-bye. Awesome. Well, I'm trying to get the best resources that I can. What time are we doing, Aaron, on Cheddar?
At nine.
Okay. Perfect. We'll take some more questions. Thanks so much. Hopefully my team's on there. If we can get a guide there, Mikey, make sure all of our team is on here.
Can you let people know? Some people are just sending questions to send their phone number too.
Oh yeah, if you send me questions, you're just sending questions. If you can send me your phone number, I can give you a call. That'd be great. So go ahead and let me know what phone number to reach you at.
This is great. Gavin.
Hi, Gavin. It's David Meltzer.
Hey, David. Good to hear from you. Nice to meet you digitally.
Yeah, nice to meet you as well. I always say toughness and telephone are two of the best things right now, and we're going to use the telephone to share your question with everyone and hopefully assist.
You bet. Well, I'm a career fireman. Been a fireman for about 10, 12 years. And I'm starting to fill in as a captain, as a company officer. So I'm calling the shots on emergency scenes, and I'm having a hard time organizing my thoughts with the mental fog that happens when stressed. So I'm wondering if you have any tips or advice on how to deal with that.
Yeah, I wrote about this in Connected to Goodness, and I think I take things for granted sometimes that they're basics. For me, whenever we think, say, or do anything that causes stress, that creates interference or corrosion to an inspired feeling, right? Anything that makes us feel bad, any attacking thought or need to be right, offended, anxious, frustrated, angry, any of these needs that are more prevalent today, right? And we want to be aware of. But the tool that I use most is to start practicing the mental stoppage of it. And what do I mean by that? When anytime you have a thought, you say something, you do something that creates this, I created a practice called cancel. And so I literally, in my mind, will say cancel, or I think cancel, and I've made this practice for 13 years. And what I'm doing is training my subconscious and unconscious mind to cancel things. And especially during this time, what we pay attention to and put our intention to will create the next coincidences in our life. So if we cancel out the things that we don't want in our life, the negative thoughts, the stress, the anxiety. Now, some things are going to bring out, I told yesterday people, when you squeeze a lemon, lemon juice comes out, right? Because you put pressure on a lemon, what's truly inside of you comes out. So what's going to happen to people because of this pressure? They're like a lemon. Some of the subconscious and unconscious thoughts that they have, some of their quantum memories from 4 generations or even farther beyond, are going to come out. And so we have to not only have a practice of canceling what we think, say, and do and believe, but we have to clear sometimes. So what I suggest, if you can't get rid of a negative thought or anxiety, even if you're canceling it, if it keeps coming back, it's usually there before you go to bed and when you wake up. That's how you know where the lemon juice is. That's how you know what's coming out of you, that's stuck in you, which is an advantage of being put under pressure, because it's really nice to know what's truly in us and what we need to work on, and some of those deeper hidden things that we need to process and get rid of. So in this opportunity, what I utilize is a clear technique, which is sit up straight and breathe through your nose and out through your mouth and simply say clear. And what you're doing is conditioning your subconscious and unconscious mind to get rid of one of those 40,000 thoughts that are stuck there every day that may not be from even your memories, right? Your lifetime of memories. It may be something that you've forgotten from a childhood, or even from something that's been passed down from you ancestrally, or even if you believe in this, even other lives that you may have lived. But it doesn't matter where it came from. It's there. And what I've learned to get rid of that and to practice ending that is this clear technique. Now, when the lemon's really squared off, we know something's quantum in us. That is part of our personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions. These are things that cause, you know, alcoholism, abuse, you know, drug usage, all types of different things that are just passed down from generation to generation. It's part of our DNA. This is a great opportunity, as the pressure may reveal some of these things, to, and this is a little bit woo-woo, but it works for me, and I'm going to share it with everyone. But, you know, cancel people believe works. Clearing people get, because it's just an instant form of meditation. But this third one gets way out there, but it works for me. So when something bothers me inherently, I can't get rid of it, right? It's one of those things that you sit there all day long going, let it go. I know I shouldn't be mad. Let it go. I know I shouldn't be scared. Let it go. I know I shouldn't be offended. Let it go. But it keeps on bugging me. And I know everyone has this experience. This is what I do. I think about that thing that's super bugging me, that's quantum in my being, right? And I go ahead and I start looking for the lesson, the light, and the love in it. Something. So if somebody, you know, screwed me over and attacked me, I'll look for the light in them and say, oh, but they're a good dad, or they're a good community member, or, you know, they have done this before. Because nobody's as good as you say they are, and nobody's as bad as you say they are. There's someone in between, and you just took a bad snapshot. You know, everybody always says, I always say, when you're taking so many pictures, especially in the digital world today, you know, I grew up in a world where you were lucky to get 13 film pictures and, you know, God forbid, you know, you had a bad one. But today there's more bad pictures taken than good ones. But when you have a bad snapshot, it's just one picture. So go ahead, find the light in whatever it is that's bugging you, and then take that light. This is by yourself, so it's good for social distancing. Go by yourself where nobody can see you so they don't think you've gone crazy, and sit there with your eyes closed and now envision the thing that bothers you most. Find the light, the love, and the lesson in it. Cover what bothers you most in your visual eye and cover it with that light. And then over here, think about what you love the most, right? Your family, your friends, the activity you get paid for, whatever it is. Banana cheesecake, you know, who knows what you're digging. But go ahead, take the light from what is bugging you the most and take a big ball of light with your and cover them both. So now you're sharing the light between what you are bugged the most about and, you know, or afraid the most about and what you love the most. And now take that light, that big ball of light, and cover yourself and hold it there. And you actually physically will feel a difference. You actually will begin a practice of shifting your energy in a quantum nature, in a deep memory of your unconscious. Your unconscious competency will change. And so now, on a conscious level, you cancel what you think, say, and do. On a subconscious level, you clear what you believe in those 40,000 of the same thoughts. And then on an unconscious level, you shift your frequency into one that's more positive, that eventually, and it doesn't happen overnight. It's like golf, man. You got to play it every day. And you just got to do it for a few minutes a day. It actually, I was so upset with one of my neighbors at one time. It took me 9 years until I had peace and forgiveness. 9 years. But it was worth it, because I don't forgive people because they deserve it. I forgive people because I deserve it, right? And, you know, forgiveness will be a big, big thing as we go through. You know, it's hypocrisy is running wild. You know, I'm loving my family. I'm loving the doctors that I know. I'm loving myself to see what an effing hypocrite all of us are, right? And I'm trying to keep, as everybody's, you know, in my home, you know, with four kids and my niece and all the people in my home that need help, I'm trying to keep everybody in a forgiving attitude, because there is hypocrisy everywhere. And I'm the king of it, by the way. But I love doctors, right? I mean, I can't understand, you know, doctors will be like, oh, you know, you can't do this, don't do this. And then they're like flying across the country. Oh, I know what I'm doing. Or they're having their, you know, their 85-year-old parents over. And, you know, they're telling you, you know, don't stand on the beach by yourself because you may rub against the lifeguard tower and somebody 8 hours later may touch the lifeguard tower. And then they're having like a super party at their house with their 85-year-old dad. Right. But I clean my house. Look, be forgiving. Like, you'll drive yourself nuts if you want to attack and find fault in bad snapshots of people. Everyone has great intentions, and we know one thing. I mean, I truly believe we need to protect the 20% that are going to get sick. It may be 100% of the people are going to get it and be asymptomatic or symptomatic, but you need to be cautious and create, you know, and guys like you, first responders like you, are going to help people understand and try not to be too big of hypocrites to protect that 20%, or at least allow us to handle the 20% and have that curve, you know, in our resources be able to help those people. But everybody out there, and this is a great question, I'm taking a lot of time on it, use cancel to cancel the conscious thoughts, use clear to clear the subconscious thoughts, and then if you're woo-woo like me and believe in shifting energies and frequencies, go ahead and shift your energy, use that technique of finding light, lessons and love and everything, and forgiveness will be the tool that you use. Forgiveness will help you find the light. If you don't forgive someone, you'll never be able to find the light, the love and the lessons, and you'll just create more interference in what you're doing. I know that was a little bit woo-woo, but hopefully it helped you.
It did. Thank you very much. I'll be trying that cancel and clear method. I'm more concerned about just in the moment on emergency scenes, since I'm transitioning into being the one that's calling the shots and making decisions, you know, when seconds can matter type of deal to clear that mental fog. So I'll be trying that cancel clear technique and be working on that.
All right. Have your team do it as well. You know, the more we empower others to do it, the easier your job will be. And thank you so much for your service, though. You are the type of people we depend on, and you always forget until you need them. But I always, whenever I see anyone of service like you, it's a huge, huge responsibility, and I appreciate your service. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Appreciate you saying that.
Awesome, man. Thank you. Stay safe.
Thanks, brother. Will do.
All righty. Yeah, thank you very much to all the first responders, all the doctors, the healthcare workers, everybody that's putting themselves into the exposed position to help other people. Certainly appreciate all of you, and we should all remember, right, reconnect, unify with those people, not only in times of need, but make sure, you know, when we come through the other side of this, because this too shall pass, and the lessons that you learn will serve you well moving forward. One of the things that I learned through 2001 was always to be grateful for those that are of service in times of need when we're not in need, right? Remember when they're pulling you over for that speeding ticket, number one, you're accountable, and they're just trying to protect and serve. And so even in the worst situations that you think are unfair, unjust, go ahead and be grateful, forgiving, and make sure that we're grateful, especially to those people that have sacrificed even their lives for us to be safe and healthy at this time especially. So thank you, everyone out there. Please put those thoughts and prayers out for everyone to be safe and healthy, and all those that help us be safe and healthy. Who's the next caller?
This is Naomi.
Naomi, okay, very good. Naomi?
Beth is calling?
Yeah, this is David Meltzer. You had reached out with a question for me?
Oh, hey.
Hi, sorry about that.
No,
Thought I was cold calling to sell you something. Nah, but I can if you want me to. I'm a great salesperson. You know, anyway, what question do you have for me?
I wrote it out, but essentially, I'm not sure if you're doing business-focused questions.
Yeah,
I run a business that I started off, it's a passion-driven business. I work with designers to help. I started off just doing fashion shows. But in getting to know the designers, I realized there's an education gap where a lot of them, they don't know enough about the fashion business to navigate creating like a profitable business. My question is twofold, right? So the core designers that help me build the business, it might be self-imposed, but they don't have large budgets to be able to properly afford my services. But I don't want to move away from them because I feel like I'm deserting my core audience. But the lack of ability to have a profitable business is causing me to lose passion for the industry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think almost everyone in that type of business has that difficulty, right? That we want to be of service to everyone. And so what you have to do is segment your business appropriately to help people. And so, you know, number one, you want to put out free content for people that can't afford you, right? You want to put out and assist the people. You want to make yourself available onto group calls and to live calls to help those people that can't afford you to get to a point where they can. You want to always have a free assessment period where you can assess how you can be a profit center for anyone that works with you. You have to take out the subjective value, because there's subjective value in everything. And this goes to any of the coaches, consultants, executives. I learned this from Marshall Goldsmith. He's one of the world's top business coaches. Used to go into the Fortune 500 and actually tell them straight out, look, I work for free. At the end of the year, you tell me what I was worth. And you're welcome to pay me whatever you think the value, the profit that I provided you. I do the exact same thing. You know, I try to provide free books and pay for shipping. I have my podcast, my TV show. I answer everything myself. I give free content. I give a free course. All of these things, by the way, you can reach out anytime at David Meltzer or text me at 949-298-29054. All I can is give for free. And then those people that want personalized one-on-one coaching, I do a free assessment with them to determine how I can be a profit center. And then I work month to month, and each month is its own business. And every month I say, hey, was this of more value than you paid me? And if so, we'll can move to the next month. Or if not, here's your money back. It's month to month and we move forward. And I always feel good about it because I guarantee value. And then and with no questions asked, you know, and you can do the exact same thing in the fashion industry. If you know you're providing value and you're confident in it, then do and give away everything you can for free to get people in a position where you can create a profit center for them and be a catalyst to that profit and guarantee it. I never lock anybody in because I don't know what circumstances are going to occur that may affect me charging more or charging less or guaranteeing what I'm doing. And that's the advantage of being of value and of service and quantitatively looking only at quantitative value and realizing there's subjective value in everything. Does that sound fair?
That sounds really good. Yes.
Awesome. Well, if you need any other help, feel free to reach out. And that was an awesome question. I appreciate it. And stay safe and healthy and have fun.
I appreciate you so much, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate you. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too. All right. Yeah, I think the world's moving towards that model as we become over 50% of the people by 2027. We're supposed to be freelancers. I think this re-engineering and repurposing that's going on will actually accelerate the number of freelancers out there, because people are going to be forced to do business at home and they're going to be learning how to be a freelancer. I think big companies are going to find efficiencies and statistical success and see what types of jobs, what types of duties and responsibilities, and how do we empower people. You know, one of the areas that I see an opportunity for me in is that, you know, as big corporations start realizing there's true value of allowing people just to work at home and they don't have as much overhead and as much space that they need, you know, teaching and getting the most efficient, effective, and statistical success of how to work out of home is one of my expertise. How to find that 4 minutes each day that turns into 24 hours of productivity a year. How not to lose things that turn into 2 weeks of productivity every year. So that's one of the areas I see an opportunity to help large companies learn how to make more money, help more people have more fun, learn how to create those efficiencies by allowing freelancers within their own organization, because obviously the trend is moving that way. People are more capable and the equipment's more capable.
Hey, Eric, please leave.
I guess that was Eric. Anyway, we're going to have Aaron from Cheddar on at 9 o'clock, right, in 10 minutes. So we'll take one or two more calls here as we're coming in. I'm looking on here. Make sure you send me your phone number.
We
got a lot of questions. Why don't you just give me a question while you look for a phone number, or somebody sends me one. Give me a good question on there. I'm looking for, you have one on Instagram there.
Someone asked, how do you communicate with your team? How do
I communicate with my team? All right. For me, when we are in our routine, we have a Monday morning meeting. In that Monday morning meeting, I remind everything of the Meltzer Matrix, which consists of knowing our four values, gratitude, forgiveness or empathy, accountability, and inspiration. And understanding inspiration is a two-way. How do we clear the connection to the light lessons and love that we have? And how does that come through us with appreciation, add value for others? Then we remind each other of our personal experiential giving and receiving values. I remind them that we are here to be in the flow by asking a series of questions of how we can be of service or value to others and how others can be of service or value to us. Using open-ended questions and then using closed-ended questions to narrow that down to a quantitative value. And then that leads us to the third thing, which is student of our calendar, which we discussed earlier with Dr. Meeta Singh. Being a student of our calendar includes three different attention, intention, and coincidences that we want. One, what we have planned for the day for efficient, effective, and statistical success. What we don't have planned for today, which I call the white space of our calendar, and looking and utilizing that with a lens of productivity, how much value are we going to provide, a lens of accessibility, how accessible are we to others, and how are we accessing what we want, and most importantly, a lens of gratitude, which gives us the try me, not why me attitude, that I get to do, not got to do. It gives me the activity I get paid for, not the activity I don't get paid for. All of those attitude mindset adjustments that are necessary. Then fourth is do it now, reminding everyone that 100% of the things that we do now get done. And if you get shit done, you will be exponentially more successful and productive and accessible and gracious than other people. And if you can't get it done, creating and having a get it done repository where we prioritize by things that are most important first, and then utilizing urgency as an independent variable to that importance. If something's just urgent, go ahead and delegate it. And then finally, reminding everyone the practice of ending fear. To number one, identify what is fear, meaning the need to be right, separate, inferior, superior, offended, resentful, angry, frustrated, anxious, guilty, all of these different feelings that separate us or cause in interference or corrosion to the connection that we have, not only to each other, but also to what inspires us. That's our Monday morning meeting to set us off on the right direction. And then Friday, we have a group training for not only in the office, but the community. And that group training is the end cap to the week, all five things discussed, plus new things that we've learned during the week. Otherwise, we practice those five things, the Meltzer Matrix with the Meltzer Kaleidoscope of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude, staying in constant communication, connected to one another. Now, the adaptable routine that we're in, because we've closed the office meeting so that people don't expose other people and we're protecting the 20% that are at risk. So what we're doing now is doing it all virtually. And what we're going to do is allow other people to join us. Friday, for example, we're going to do our training online, and we're going to have the first 100 people online join our training and get to see what we normally do to communicate to our team. It, as Dr. Meeta said, so important that every day that everyone is communicating to one another, that I'm communicating with all of our associates, partners, clients, and the community to see how I can be of service, right? I know that, you know, 5 or 6 hours of my day is spent routinely sleeping, so all the other time is going to be spent communicating with those most relative to me, all the way down to those that I don't even know, and utilizing it to send out any information, courses, books, etc. You will join. I will be doing lives from home. I will be doing my training from home. What time's training on Friday? What is it?
Oh, we're gonna do.
Hi. Lola, this is Dave Meltzer.
Hi, Dave. So lovely to talk to you. You were at our Wealth Bowl in Palm Desert earlier this year.
Yeah, I love the Wealth Bowl, and so much a blessing to stand on stages. But when you get a crowd that has the energy that the Wealth Bowl has, it's just an incredible opportunity to share ideas and to inspire each other. And that was one of my favorite speeches that I've given, and Q&As and audiences that I've ever seen. So thank you so much for that. But you have a question for me.
Yeah, I do. So starting tomorrow, I'll be self-quarantined with, I help take care of my mother. She's beat cancer a few times. She has diabetes. She is a high at risk, for the virus right now. So we as a family decided that we're going to hunker down. But I'm really convinced that most of her illnesses have been created from her anxiety. that she's had throughout her life that she doesn't really manage well. And so I just wanted to know, like, if you can give any advice as to what, you know, I can do. I mean, I can't change her mindset. I can just try to protect my own. But, you know, what are some tips that you have with dealing with somebody when you live with somebody who has high anxiety, because it can be negative at times?
Yeah, so number one, I love the fact that you are realistic about, you know, if somebody, for example, is depressed, you can't just tell them, look at the glass half full, you know, and expect them to change their entire being, because not only is it conscious what you think, say, and do, but it's in their subconscious. There's 40,000 of the same thoughts that have been sitting there, and then it's also within their DNA. You know, and the older that we are, you know, the more stubborn in practice those are. You know, if you've been playing golf your whole life, you're not going to be able to change your swing pattern just because someone tells you, hey, you know, you got to move your thumb over a quarter of an inch. That's not going to help. So, but what does help is the understanding of the practice. Number one, just pragmatically, you know, if somebody has a higher anxiety level, let's try to reduce that as much as we can by surrounding them with the right people and the right ideas. So, you know, I would make sure there's no negative news, you know, there's no fear-based podcast and movies, that, you know, try to just, you know, subtly keep positive energy and positive thoughts, actions, words, you know, movies, TV, whatever her interaction is, try to keep it as positive as possible to be able to start, you know, tempering what could be, you know, an escalation of that anxiety or stress. So that's the number one thing I would do. Secondly, around it, you know, just make sure that you're protecting her from exposure. You know, that's just a reminder. I mean, people are going to want to come see, but, you know, wash the iPad, wash the phones, you know, keep contact limited with family members other than digitally. The more contact she can have digitally with family members, the better. So those, it always makes us feel good to see, you know, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles, friends. So if you can encourage that as well, that will help surround her with the right people and the right ideas. But I think very systematically, those are the two practices that we should have as we're protecting those people that are at risk, what I call the 20% of those people. And so if we can do that, you will find that there'll be a safe ending for everyone, which is ultimately your goal. And I think that's a beautiful and great question, and I also appreciate the fact that you're doing that for her, and I hope everyone around you appreciates it as well. So thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you on the other side of this at the next Wealth Bowl.
Yes, exactly. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your call and the time that you're giving to all of us. It's great value. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much. We're next going to call Erin with Cheddar and talk a little esports. We're just blessed to have her. I know we have a lot of questions about different things in the sports world because of my background experience and situational knowledge. Esports seems to be a natural fit because we don't have to be together to do it, but yet we can interact, and it is the fastest growing sport in the world. It is one of the most exciting things. Go ahead, and you don't believe me, ask your 9-year-old. I learned 2 years ago when I asked my 9-year-old, hey, you know, I'm blessed to know guys like Warren Moon and Marshall Faulk and CJ Anderson. These guys have offered to help you, Miles, do a little coaching with you this summer, or, you know, other baseball players. And he's like, oh, can you get me a Fortnite coach? So things are changing. And if we want to make money, help people, and have fun, we got to understand esports. I'm blessed to be one of the founding investors in Overactive Media. The Toronto teams used to be formerly known as Splice, but extremely exciting opportunities exist in esports, as you will see not only today through these repurposing and reengineering times, but as we come out the other side stronger, better, and faster, more people will be involved with esports. Hello? Hi, Erin.
Hi.
Hi, it's David Meltzer.
How are you? How's everything going?
Oh, it's going well. I'm really excited to talk to you. I get so many questions, especially today with what's going on about esports and Cheddar. And I thought it'd be fun to have you on and see if we could ask you a few questions and get your insight on the established business as it is, the growth of the business, how this repurposing and reengineering of what's going on today is going to impact esports, and kind of move from there, if that sounds good.
Yeah, that definitely sounds good. And I have some questions for you as well.
Nice.
I'm excited to be able to ask.
That's awesome. Well, Aaron, why don't you just tell us what you do at Cheddar and give us a little bit of background on what you do and your perspective with esports.
Yeah, of course. So I am a host of Cheddar Esports. It is a esports gaming show on Cheddar Network. And the one thing that I guess with my role, especially within this industry, is appropriately highlighting and showcasing the different facets and storylines within esports and gaming. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of different CEOs and pro players and even professional athletes in the fans of traditional sports that are looking to integrate themselves into esports and gaming. And, you know, it's so important, even now it's so important to highlight these different areas to have people have a further understanding of the esports world and how, also even understanding the difference between esports and gaming. Even though esports is within the gaming industry, there is still a little bit of differences when it comes to both. So that's what I do. And I've been doing media work for, oh my gosh, like 10 years. I'm young. I started when I was about 17 years old, covering traditional sports and music media, and then I found my way over to esports.
Oh, that's awesome. And now, one of the things that, you know, as people look into the esport industry, they're trying to get a guide on it as a sport. And there's so many different leagues, teams, games, that it gets very confusing to explain to people. You know, as I'm one of the original investors in Overactive Media with Chris Overholt and those guys in Meta and Marcus Colston and a few others, as we've learned, you know, each of the different licenses in itself is really its own sport, but yet there's leagues, teams, and all these different variables that are confusing people of how do I get my arms around this when I'm used to, you know, the NFL plays football.
Yeah, so one way I try to explain to people is that it's very, like you said, very similar to how traditional sports is. You have the NBA of the world, and if you want to have a correlation with NBA, it would be League of Legends. Then you have like the NFL, you have the Major League Baseball. The same way that all of those leagues are under the umbrella of sports leagues, they all have their distinct players, they all have their different teams, they all have their different rules and regulations, and you know, they do have similarities across the board, but the same way that we see sports leagues function, esports leagues function as well. The only difference is that there are certain esports competitive teams where they are not city-based franchise systems. So, like, for example, League of Legends is not a city-based franchise system. And that specific competition is split up into a division more specifically overseas for Europe and Asia. And then they also have a division that is more so for over here in the Americas and the Western Hemisphere. And so you have that. But then you have competitions like Overwatch League and Call of Duty. They have city-based franchise systems that are set up. So you have a team from Minnesota, Minnesota Rocker for Call of Duty. Then for Overwatch, for New York, you have NYXL. And they also have their own New York Call of Duty team, the Subliners. So with esports, what we're starting to see is certain competitive teams are actually implementing the traditional frameworks that we see in sports. And even some people from traditional sports are working over there, like Johanna Ferris, who's the commissioner for the Call of Duty League. She's been at the NFL prior for many, many years. Now she's over there. And it's interesting that even though people may look at the esports competitive scene and be like, oh my gosh, like this is so new, it's very similar to traditional sports. You do have the Michael Jordans of the world for League of Legends, that's a player named Faker. You do have the top teams, you do have the top franchises. It's just, it seems like it's a lot, but when you break it down and you look at every competitive scene, it's very similar in some structures and formats as traditional sports. The only difference, though, with esports is you don't need to be competing face-to-face with one another. That's why esports right now is the only sport that is still going, because they can play online with each other.
Right, and their fans are online watching with Twitch and other things. So it's so, and that's going to have a huge impact moving forward. One of the most interesting things that I found, you know, I got involved in 2016 and early on only because my son and I went to the NBA championship with the head of my media, and he looked over at Oracle Arena and told me that it sold out for the League of Legends tournament or finals. And I said to him, no, I think you're mistaken. You know, that's an online thing. And he said, and then my media guy said, no, more people are going to watch the championship than will watch the NBA championship for League of Legends. And I said, no, that can't be. And I did research, and I couldn't believe that, you know, me, myself, who ran the most notable sports agency in the world, had one of the most notable sports marketing companies and media companies, and all the people from the owners to the GMs to the presidents to, you know, I'm commissioner of USA Cricket, and I'm on the Olympic Committee, like all these things I'm involved with. How could this have, you know, in 2016 gone past me? But yet I'll still go on a show, and I won't name the networks, but I was interviewed even recently on a really big network with a really big show, and I brought up esports, and the two commentators literally didn't know about it. That's the discrepancy, the division still in the traditional side of things. Now, we've reached much closer to chasm, but I still think people don't understand that there are millions and millions, if not a billion people, that don't even know what esports are. They just think about gaming.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think right now is although we are in a period of time that's very unsettling, it's also an opportunity for people to further understand esports, and also the opportunity for people within esports and even content creators within the gaming space to put out content to thrive, considering there's a lot more eyeballs and attention with people self-quarantining and so forth. But I actually have a question for you that I'm really interested in asking, because you, throughout your career, whether it's through ups or downs, you've had to adapt and adjust. And there's a lot of people now that are trying to adapt and adjust, especially for their careers, because businesses are being affected. What would be an advice that you would give to those who are looking to make that pivot and make that turn and to adapt to the current time that we're in from a career standpoint? And I know not everyone can, but even if they have the ability to, or even have the ability to pivot marketing-wise, what would your advice be?
Yeah, so number one, you know, my career is a continuum, right? My career is activity I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. It's a career that will involve how productive I can be, meaning how much value I can provide and hopefully get paid for, how much and how accessible am I to others, and how am I accessing what I want out of my career, and, you know, having the right mindset, which leads to the three things that everybody should look at in their career outside of defining themselves. You know, the ego is going to want you to define yourself as, you know, I'm a cheddar, you know, analyst producer, or this, you know, this is me. I'm a lawyer, a doctor, an engineer, a failure. People will define themselves by their career. I never have. And probably because I was in the pursuit of money early in my career. So what I looked at was I need to develop my skills. I need to learn all the lessons I can through experience and mentorship, and being more interested than interesting. But every day that I was developing skills would give me more options. The other thing that I wanted to develop was my knowledge through mentorship, experience, whatever it was. The more knowledge that I had, the better I could have pivot opportunities, right? More options that I would have. And then finally, and most importantly to me, was that I had a different perspective of desire, right? I wasn't going to live by voting for what other people wanted my career to be. And I think this is one of the biggest detriments, is that, you know, so many people are worried about, you know, what their parents think, their grandparents think, their best friends think, their teachers think, their counselors think. You have to care in respect of listening and learning through skills and knowledge, But ultimately, you need to vote for what you want, because the one thing that will make you successful in that continuum will be that journey will be dictated by your desire, and your desire will be dictated on what you're willing to invest in yourself. I never use the word sacrifice. People say, oh, you know, this guy, this woman, they sacrifice so much. It's no, I'm consistently investing in myself and voting for what I want, right? And it's a big difference. And so if you or anyone else out there, you're so young, if you change your priorities and focus to every day, I'm going to learn as many and practice as many skills as I can through experience and mentorship, et cetera. Two, knowledge. I am on a desperate quest for knowledge. I am more interested than interesting. I'm consistently, and I always have a period of time during the day that I have scheduled for research or interest. And then three, I'm going to invest as much in myself as I can, because the legs feed the lion. And the more that I invest in myself, the greater the opportunities are going to be to pivot. Those three things just provide me more options and opportunities than anyone else. And this is the time to start doing it while everybody has a little bit of extra downtime. Everybody can take a step out of the water and look at the entire pond and figure out what boat or water ski or jet ski they want to take, and be able to develop and put a plan to develop different skills, right? I always joke around, but I practice skills. You know, I decided that selling after law school, selling was going to be a great skill. And then I learned within the context of selling, raising money was going to be this expertise or the superpower I wanted within selling. And then to teach people all of these things became a skill as well. And I gained as much knowledge as I could through watching, reading, learning, and most importantly, asking. And as you know, not to be repetitive, if you can get into the practice of asking open-ended questions and narrowing it down of how you can be of service or of value, but more importantly, having the radical humility to ask people how they can help you. You know, one touch of favor, right? I mean, people like me have changed lives for people by making one introduction and people performing in those opportunities, because that's the best way to get involved in a new opportunity, is somebody to recommend you or give you advice. Well, I do that because people change my life. I've had certain people that have given me opportunities and touches of favor, referrals and opportunities. Yes, I had the skills, the knowledge, and the investment in myself or the desire, but without those touches of favor, I never would have had the acceleration and growth or even the recovery that I had when I was with Lee Steinberg and lost, you know, literally everything financially. I had such a network of people willing to help me. And if I didn't ask for help from those people, I don't think I would be where I am today. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. And I 100% agree. You know, for me, I've had help along the way. And even for me personally, like in 2018, I went through such a transitional period in my career, my life. It was pretty much a very hectic year, in the sense that, you know, I was laid off from a job. I had an extensive hip surgery. I literally didn't have insurance or anything for that whole year. And even through all of that, right, it was a moment where, one, I learned that it's okay to ask for help. And two, in addition to that as well, that was the period of time that I made the transition into covering esports and the gaming industry from a media perspective, instead of just being someone who watches it. And that was the moment that I chose to take a route that I wanted to take, and whether people agreed with it or not. And it worked out in the end. So it's really interesting just to see how there's these pivotal moments in our lives that move us towards having a career that we want. And like you said, not having parents or anyone dictate or give their opinions in terms of what we can and cannot be. So it's really interesting, and I appreciate that advice. I'm sure a lot of people are looking to be able to make that transition now in some way, shape, or form. And especially now more than ever, we need to help one another.
And Aaron, you know what's funny when you say that is most people don't know this about one of my mentors is Einstein, right? I study Einstein. I love Einstein. I love the theory of relativity and time and the metaphysical world of what he can prove mathematically. But the key to Einstein's success was that he couldn't get a job out of school. And so he was the only one that graduated he couldn't get a job, and so he had all this downtime just to think about things. And it's amazing if people would take this opportunity, whether it's 3 or 6 or 8 weeks, whatever it may be. We are going, you know, there's an old religious saying, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. But yet, we have an extraordinary opportunity, like Einstein did, to use our higher power of thinking and to figure things out without voting for what other people want, to exploring like you did, because it did. It changed your life. And now you have so many different options in what you can do. You know, in your 20s, you are sitting in a growing space with a lot of skills, knowledge, and desire that a lot of people don't have. And you'll have many, many more options as esports as a platform grows, as esports as a industry grows. You know, it's still at its early phases, it's pre-chasm, although it's very successful and more people are involved in any other sport without everybody knowing it. You know, there's gonna be so many opportunities, but you have the skills, knowledge, and desire in the quest and journey. And I promise you, you know, when you got involved, there was more people that were laughing, scoffing, and confused by what you were doing, the same way as when I got involved in the internet and started to vote for what I wanted. Here you are getting involved at the same age, at the same time, into esports the way I did with the internet, and it will only serve you well. And the only thing I hope is that you remember me when you're so big and you're my age. You'll be like, oh yeah, that old man Dave Meltzer, I should give him a call. He helped me out.
Oh yeah, of course I will. I would definitely reach out. I mean, I'm going to stay in touch with you, obviously, throughout the entire process. I guess another question for you is, because esports is integrating more traditional sports, like, for example, Oakland Raiders, they were adding a gaming zone within their new stadium. Then also the Sixers at Wells Fargo Center, not just Sixers, but all the teams that play at Wells Fargo Center, they have Nerd Street Gamers that put a gaming station in there. So we're starting to see traditional sports embracing esports. How does that, I guess, impact from a sports marketing perspective, now that there are brands that are looking for that intersection of traditional sports and esports together, whether it's via players, whether it's via teams or anything like that?
Yeah, so I have a really easy answer to that, because if you traditionally look, you know, originally sports is always a successful place to advertise and brand. And so, you know, originally it was done in newspapers, you know, and I'm old enough where I, living on the West Coast, used to have to wait for the newspaper to find out whether the Padres beat the Mets or not. And it was usually not, but whether the Padres beat the Mets or not, because East Coast time, right, it got too late. They couldn't report on it, right? The printers went out too much. So the same thing holds true today. You went from paper to radio, radio to black and white TV, black and white TV to color TV, and then color TV to HD TV, and then to handhelds and to ubiquity. Throughout that whole spectrum of time, what advertising and marketing is all about and branding is all about is repetitive exposure to content, determinative upon three things. How far of a reach or spectrum, you know, does it have? How powerful is signal? What audience are you looking at? And how clear is your message, right? And, you know, I used to joke around when early on in the traditional days, I would ask, we were doing, you know, a Metrex commercial with Troy Aikman, and I'd ask people, just joking, I'm like, what was the name of that product when they saw the commercial? And if a high percent of the people said, I don't remember, I said, you just missed the boat, right? Well, the same thing's gonna hold true in esports. The only difference is we have such an effect that you can actually reach 4.2 billion people, that you actually can pick your spectrum. I mean, I could advertise specifically to, you know, 19-year-old boys who like, you know, Hershey's milk chocolate bars with almonds, you know? That wasn't happening when you put an ad in a newspaper before. But the key to it is, what is the strength of the signal? What's the spectrum you're looking for in the clarity of the message? And how are we, number one, capturing the content, modifying the content, amplifying the content, and perpetuating it? Another thing that exists today is the extended life of content that never existed before. So if I did a Super Bowl commercial for $3 million, it would play for 30 seconds during the Super Bowl. It would never be seen again. Now, when I play a commercial today, that's the beginning of the life cycle, because I'm capturing that commercial and putting it on LinkedIn and Instagram and YouTube and all these other places. And hopefully it has the strength of a signal that other people want to share that and move forward. And now I can take anything. I can take a player, a game, a league, a stadium, whatever it is I want, and I can capture it, modify it, amplify it, and perpetuate it, combined with a brand, and make money, but quantitatively show them exactly who was watching that and how it converted into whatever their objective was, sales, you know, a survey, data, whatever it may be. There, the traditional sense of marketing and media is most important, but it's people like you that, as I explain how traditional media and how the Fortune 500 work and how the multi-billions of dollars in marketing that are spent, you now can help effectuate, knowing what I know, how best to get the most bang for my dollar. And that's where the value of your knowledge, your skills, and your desire will come in and allow you to really make an impact on the marketing and media world.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too, because there are such nuances to each community, especially when it comes to the gaming scene. And I think ultimately everyone in this community just wants to make sure that people come in from a genuine approach. And also the typical marketing standards that we've seen when it comes to certain brands and other areas, it doesn't seem to be applying in gaming and esports. Like, for example, Louis Vuitton and League of Legends. Many people in the gaming world are just like, what? Because if you think of Louis Vuitton, it's a very high-end brand, and we don't, at least prior, we did not associate high-end brands with esports, right? And so for them to be associated with League of Legends, I mean, I guess the correlation would be the high-end or the high-tier competitive scene, but even them integrating Louis Vuitton in a way where they implement into skins and trophy cases and stuff, that was something that even the community itself in esports were just like amazed by. But it's really cool to see how, even from a marketing and branding perspective, some of the things that we've seen within traditional sports and other sectors, it doesn't quite apply entirely to esports and gaming. And then even still, you have like the likes of Fortnite. Fortnite is its own world that any A-tier movie or company can market in it. So it's been interesting just to see that transition. Is there anything that you would like me to touch on when it comes to esports for your viewers?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about, because I am a sports, you know, marketing person itself, is one of the core understandings that's necessary to be successful is specifically real estate. And understanding what real estate is available, because each of the games, you know, some of the games have entire worlds. And mm-hmm. within that world, there's a ton of real estate in the game and outside the game, whether it's on Twitch or Cheddar or other places, where you have interest and eyeballs and spectrum and signal and clarity that's available. But I'd love for you to explain to the audience just the landscape of real estate that's available in the esports realm, in the industry of esports. Where is the real estate available to advertise and market?
So that's an interesting question, because there's so many different layers, and there's also areas that are currently being built. So of course, on a grander scale, you have the traditional like way that brands get in is via media rights, sponsorships, and even advertising in terms of broadcasting. But we're starting to see different ways that companies are getting involved. So of course, like you have like the Louis Vuittons that have an integration with not only the competitive scene, but also the game itself. Then you have entirely in-game advertising when it comes to Fortnite, where they create a whole event or skins or even certain locations on the map to add in. And usually those are for higher end, right? Then also you have the collegiate scene that's growing. That's another area. The NCAA is not involved in collegiate esports right now. There are a lot of different platforms like Play Versus and a few other organizations, even Riot's involved with the Riot Scholastic in the college competitive scene. So right now there is an opportunity for brands to get involved on the college side. There also are other competitive scenes that do not receive as much, because there's certain tier levels to each competitive scene. Like everyone has the League of Legends, Overwatch, Call of Duty, Dota 2. There's also Rocket League. And the fighting game community is another one that is now starting to build up even more. And even within the fighting game community, in terms of their competitive games, broken down into titles. So you have Tekken, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. So there's even levels of sponsoring players. Typically, you know, there are sponsorship of players, even more so in the fighting game community. There are sponsorships of teams. There are, content creators, sponsorships or brand integration for streamers in terms of in-play stream or even just content. There's even colleges are now developing programs also where if certain companies want to get involved, like my alma mater, the University of Kentucky, just partnered with an esports org called Gen G, and they're actually developing a program, esports program at the university. Then you also have Harrisburg University has a degree. There's a few other colleges that are starting to implement esports degrees in different ways. There's so many ways that brands can get involved. And there's conferences, indie developers that are developing. I mean, there's so many different areas. I think the one thing that I've always highlighted, whether it's on Cheddar Esports or outside, is that don't look at everything that the other brands are doing. What the brands are doing is the traditional, the route, those three ways of sponsorship, advertising, and media rights, right? And those are like the main income sources for esports scene right now in terms of brands putting money in. But there are so many different ways that they can get involved. And there's also a lot of influencers in the sense of nano influencers, micro and macro. And I think that especially now, there are ways to kind of think outside the box. And especially now with, even the NBA is tapping into gaming right now with the Suns. The Phoenix Suns just did a simulator for one of their games. I think they're doing simulations for the entire season. And so I think there's so much land to kind of tap into because a lot of mainstream brands are just getting into the scene. Even though esports has been around for well over 20 years, they're just getting to the scene a lot more. But with those high-end brands or those high-tier brands going for those typical sponsorships, marketing, and branding routes, it's so important for people to also focus in on the grassroots area and even small, lower-tier esports scenes as well, because they get traffic as well. It may not get as high as League of Legends, but Rocket League gets a good amount of traffic. So does the fighting game community. And these are communities and people that will spend money. It's just more important to make sure that whatever way the brands integrate themselves, it has to be a genuine approach. It has to be in a way that makes sense for the community. And it's so important that brands don't just come in and make it very apparent that, they're just trying to grab the audience, because the esports and gaming community, they're very vocal. They will tell you about yourself. And they have a right to, because, gamers have been chastised for a while. So they will be honest about it. I mean, we've seen artists come in who aren't gamers and people got upset. So it's just about finding the right path and route for you in this landscape. And then also making sure that it's such a genuine approach and in a way that fits within the community and what they establish. I really encourage a lot of brands to take the time to watch competitive scene, watch streams, watch you can actually follow specific video game titles on Twitter, really see how they engage and how they interact with each other. And that's going to help you with finding ways to plant yourself into esports and gaming from a genuine perspective.
That is awesome. When I'm listening to you, I'm thinking back when I was your age, around 1993, and just involved in the internet. And somebody asked me a very similar question about the internet And they were just as lost as most of the more traditional people were in marketing and branding, lawyers, doctors, insurance brokers, all about the internet. And it was a recession, and everybody was worried about, you know, where are these jobs? It was very similar today, a lot of scarcity, fear, anxiety. And then, you know, as a young person, kind of gave my perspective of the internet and how the internet would transcend with how much content could be pushed through it, how people would access it, the different mediums that would eventually happen, all the way to, you know, from having it in your hand to having it inserted in you and then even replacing components of you, you know, where you can receive this information. You know, people looked at me and it got, you know, so big that it encouraged everyone that, wow, there may be an entire different industry where billions of people can participate and monetize regardless of what happens. It's completely secure and it's completely authentic. That kept coming through from what you say, that we need to have a, you know, vibration of the truth, that we need to illuminate what it is and what it's not, and we have to provide the value because it's not going to lie to us. It's going to let us know exactly who's watching, where the data and where the value quantitatively is. And I'm so just excited that you shared all of this with us, especially in this time where people may not be in an optimistic view of what opportunities exist. If you want to take the next 3 to 6 weeks and just learn and experience, like Aaron suggests, esports, go ahead, follow things, watch things, you'll be able to apply the skills, knowledge, and desire that you have to an entirely new industry that has unlimited potential for everyone to participate in. It's the great equalizer of all industry and of all sport. Doesn't matter if you look like me or look like Jay Stone or look like LeBron James, you could be a multimillionaire within the context, a participant, it doesn't matter. It is the great equalizer of all, a great platform. And Aaron, I look forward to having future conversations with you. Look forward to helping you in any way that I can to share my experience, situational knowledge, dummy tax, advice that I can give from my perspective, and certainly would appreciate your help as we both grow this industry together. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, I'm excited to be growing with you in the community as a whole. It's, like I said, even though it's unsettling times right now, it's also a great opportunity for us to all come together and just continue to grow.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Help everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Julie's on and she has a question.
All right. Julie is on and has a question. Should we call her? All right, I'll call her. All right, we got, is this the last question? Justin, this is the last question?
Yes.
All right. I'll tell you one thing I don't like about doing this is, like, you sit here and everyone else is reacting to everything. And you're like, what? What? Like, your natural reaction is, what'd they say? Who is it?
Hi, honey.
Hi. Hello,
Julie. What did I say?
What question do you have for us?
Wait, what'd you say?
Who's the barking rat behind you?
It's my dog barking at another dog.
Can you pet it? You're live. You know that, right? There's like.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you're live.
Hi. Okay. So what I said was, why are you so cute? Do you have any answer?
Unfortunately, I think people are puking online.
I just want to squeeze your cheeks.
Oh my gosh, our littlest one turned 10 yesterday, so now I guess I'm going to be the victim of this type of behavior. For all of you that think I'm cute, go ahead, call in, let me know. I'm sure the phones will ring off the hook. For those of you that don't think I'm cute, go out and help somebody else.
Who barks? I will beat them up.
Well, you're my last caller of the day. I appreciate it. We're going to go live tomorrow. Instagram live tomorrow. We're going to social spread. We've got limited number of people in here by the quarantine laws. Julie, I'll be coming home very soon. I love you. Thank you. That was a short list of people, Julie and my mom, that think I'm cute, and other blind and deaf women out there that may think I'm cute as well. But moreover, you join tomorrow live. I'm going to keep on coming live on Instagram. Friday, we're going to do a Zoom, the first 100 people training. Do we figure out what time? We got our chief betterment officer has to get better. 8 a.m. is all right. 8 a.m. on Friday, we'll have a Zoom link send out for the first 100 people. That's all we can handle to do a training, typical training that we do every Friday. We'll probably circle back and maybe even let everybody join our Monday morning meeting as well. Get a feel for that as we expand out. If you need me, reach out at David Meltzer. Text me at 949-298-2905. Our office is closed. We are being respectful and responsible to not share anything negative towards the 20% that may be exposed and damaged by this unfortunate disease. But just because this disease is harmful doesn't mean it doesn't give opportunity. And I think that's the biggest lesson that we've learned today by all the Q&A is like, you know, Einstein figured it out when he had some downtime. So many great things are figured out when we have this downtime. Spend time with what you value most. It's very rare that we get the extraordinary opportunity to get out of the rat race and be a little bit of Zen. You know, my nickname's the Ferocious Buddha for a reason. It's definitely a time to be ferocious and to be a Buddha. So be productive, accessible, but also be gracious, be mindful, and be positive. And most importantly, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. All of those things will definitely make room for what you want. Go ahead, reach out. This is Dave Meltzer, and stay safe, everyone. Take care. Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Playbook, but more importantly, I want you to join my text community. I'm doing a lot of fun things there, one-on-one conversations, trainings, giveaways, and it's the first place I release all the information that I'm giving. So join me at my text platform, 949-298-2905. That's 949-298-2905. Join my exclusive community.